This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas, powered by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, I'm Philip C and welcome to The Breakfast Grill. On today's Breakfast Grill, I'm in conversation with Anna Teo, founder and group CEO of Hernan Corporation. Now, they may be the largest exporter of the king of fruits, i.e. the durian, but are their returns delivering a royal margin? A very good morning to you, Anna. How are you keeping?
Hi, Philip. I'm good. Everything, it's coming back to normal.
What is normal now and what we expect very much so is the durian season. We are now in the durian season. How are sales?
Well, unfortunately, because of the heavy rain, our main crops should be anytime now. But it seems that we have to delay another 2 more months from now, especially from the Pahang side. We may have some fruits from the southern, but it won't be enough for us to do our exports.
Give us a sense of the difference in your forecast production and sales for this year versus last year. Is it going to be the same or higher? Will the delay by 2 months be able to catch up from 2020?
Based on our forecast this year, we're supposed to do about 1,005 tons. So everything still remains, we hope. Yeah, we may catch up. So with the kind of weather coming in, the feeling of the heat, if you feel it now. So with the our farm management, with our boys, I think they are very, very, very hard working now, extra, you know, to try to catch back with all these fertilizing and foliar spraying now. I think we should be able to catch up.
So the goal is equal the same amount of volume versus last year or even better it perhaps, right?
In fact, we plan compared to last year. We will do extra another 500 tons.
Okay. But I presume yield would have gone up. Like the price of durian, has that improved a lot since 2021, 2020? Since that we are now entering a recovery stage, is pent up demand such? Do you expect yields to improve?
Well, I am not so sure about the yield because now what we are trying to do is we just see a little bit of flowers coming up. Well, whether the yield of the fruits will be really made it through, I'm not sure yet because it's too early to tell. Don't put me into the hot plate again because people are going to curse me if the price of durian coming up again. But nevertheless, these are commodities. It's beyond my control. Yeah.
I mean, commodities are going through an extremely tough time, presumably crops all around the world. So one would expect 10-20% increases in prices, no?
Well, everything increased in prices. Our fertilizer has increased more than 80%. So where do we put on the extras? So we had to do some, maybe we had to pass down to the price to the consumer without a choice because the fertilizer, in fact, everything has increased, including packaging, carton boxes. What about logistics? Sending it to US and UK, the logistic, the price of the sea freights has increased 4 to 5 times.
You know, and you look at your cost structure, you know, 21, 22, how much of your cost structure is a result of, you know, fertilizer cost versus the logistics cost versus the marketing cost, right? Can you help us understand your cost structure a bit more? What are the key cost components?
That's a lot. That's very different, okay? You're talking about ocean freights, yeah? So we have to get the quote from the liners, different timing, different prices. So I think, I would say compared to last year, just for our normal routes, I just give you a normal route to China. I don't want to go too far. The price of the freight charges has increased double, okay? Fertilizer, I would think 80% is very conservative. Yeah, that what we...
80% increase?
Yes, because... And we had to... Bear in mind, we had to buy in advance. Like, we have to pay in advance for a year to make sure that our stocks are available and we need to pay and hedge for it. That, can you imagine that?
How much does fertilizer contribute to your total cost structure? Are we talking like 20%, 10%?
We're talking about upstream, yeah, because we separate the business as in upstream, you know, the whole market, I mean, the cost of the, yeah. So I think it comprises the most, together with the, what you call the manpower, yeah, the wages costs, the one that are the main contributions to our OPEX, yeah. And second is the fertilizer and the foliar, and the rest, I think, are quite significant, not so much of impact.
And you bring up the point that Hernan Corporation is actually a massive player across the value chain of the business. Mm-hmm. You grow the durians. You actually do manufacturing and cold chain operations. You actually do the distribution and marketing. You're also an exporter. At which points of the value chain now are the most interesting and with the most opportunity for you? And which ones are the most challenging?
I think every segment.
Every segment.
Nothing is easy, right? But nevertheless, it's very benefits for our company, especially we have that integrated vertical cultivation, processing, and we have our own B2C market in China. I think that is something that the unique comparing with other player in the market, where we currently, I will be very proud to say that we will have our own supplies where we don't really need to depend on the local trading market. So, of course, this is where the cash cow coming from. Actually, we know we can play around with the selling price as compared if it's in the trading market. We need to actually depend on the price, on the daily price, which is actually not benefiting us, especially if we lock in or we sign a contract on the long term. So processing, I think, is quite stagnant. Yeah, everything is quite transparent where the cost of individual, whether it's the OPEX, I think it's quite similar to all players across where the packaging, everything seems normal. But during the pandemic, there's something new that I have put onto our company's pipeline, which actually I set up a Shanghai office because I know during this pandemic, we are unable to travel. So being China, the biggest market for us, so I set up a Shanghai office within 3 months. So what I did was actually I called up a friend who is actually an ex-CFO for a Malaysian company based in Shanghai, where he's actually, so-called, he's actually retired. But anyway, I told him I needed help. Asked him to actually to set up a fully Malaysian-owned company on my behalf and start recruiting sales, logistics, and marketing, all these department up within 3 months.
Fast turnaround. And I presume it's because China is a huge market. Give us a sense about how much China contributes to your top line.
Well, 85%.
85%?
Yes.
Is that too risky that you've put all your eggs in one basket?
Well, 1.4 billion population versus what I have on the 18 exported countries. I think gradually, we try to increase, to US. As recently, I don't know why I have a lot of inquiry from US. Perhaps I think I have actually break the tastes of the American.
Yeah.
They start buying a lot, especially the orders are coming quite significantly.
I guess you have to diversify the business, is what you say, right? Trying to cater to the Western palate.
Yeah.
And make sure that you don't over-concentrate in a key market. But I do want to focus on China because, as you said, right, it's a huge market, 1.4 billion people. How easy is it to penetrate the Chinese market? Just talk about 5-6 years ago, Thailand like had 90%, 95% share of durian production and exports, right? Malaysia was tiny. How has it evolved since then? Because we know the government has made great strides to remove all these tariffs and restrictions. So where are we now versus Thailand?
Well, we are far behind. In fact, I think if you, with the status, I think we are barely 5% versus the Thai exports. But one thing I would like to praise about our Malaysian Musang King is actually we actually win the Chinese, the taste bud of what they want for durian. So they really appreciate those fully ripened Musang King compared to those that, has been pre-cut from the tree, and texture is much far different and expectation is there. So I just came back from Thailand and I see the way how the cultivations and the market segment and all what they are doing. I'm quite excited where my client very confidently tell me that they would like to increase, importing Malaysian durian from 10% versus what they used to, currently what the current 10%, and they want to increase to 30% in the coming 5 years.
So as you say, right, 5% is very low and there's a lot of opportunity. The product is good. There's certain quality to it. What does it take, right, to move it and move the needle and move the market share to double digit, like you said, 10, then 30%?
Mm-hmm.
We have a long way to go, but what are the key things we have to do?
Well, I have to start going around, to encourage more.
So it's a classic
farming
case about marketing?
Yeah, actually, we did quite a good job, especially promoting Malaysian. But what we need is actually we need the supply. I keep having this shortfall, which I couldn't comply until today, doing durian. I have never complete my supply. And I always have this owing from a season to another season. So yeah, it's a good business to go in.
So is the real challenge is that, the issue you have is upstream, that your amount of durians that you can farm and produce is actually restricting your ability to maximize your potential as the business? Is your biggest challenge your upstream, which is your durian production, is limiting your ability to grow the business? That's the biggest challenge
you
have,
actually,
right?
What we have, I think, in Malaysia, what we're currently supplying is not what the China really can. What I'm trying to say is what currently what we supply from Malaysian plantation. Mm. I think we still got a far bit more, you know, space for us to actually to supply. I mean, the Chinese people really coming in, you know, in big time to tell us that, you know, they really want a sufficient numbers of supplies coming in. In fact, what I'm trying to say is, for what we are supplying, not even 2% of to cover the whole entire China. So imagine durian from Thailand and Malaysia not even penetrate through the first tier. I mean, they are in first tier and part of second tier cities. So imagine the third tiers you haven't untouched yet. But we are not targeting this third tier. But we are trying to say it's not all populations of China has actually tried durian. So if you want to cover the 1.4 billion population, I think we still got far bit of market to. Yeah,
I think what you're saying here is demand really is outstripping supply.
Yes,
for sure. So when you think about what is easy for you and the concentration that you have in China, which is a huge demand there, but you also want to make sure that you cover yourself and diversify, right? What are the other key markets that are, in your view, easier to penetrate? Because as you say, the Western palate will take some time to get into. They're beginning to like it, but it'll take a bit of time. Where are the other alternative markets that you feel are very important for Hernan Corporation to pursue as well?
Okay, last year, we managed to penetrate into Japan. It's something that I won't say is going to be a big market, but it's something for us to prove our capability to challenge the quarantine, especially, you know, the Japanese are very systematic.
Mm.
So we managed to penetrate through it. And of course, Indonesia, yeah, 300 million population is some good numbers for us to go in, yeah.
One wonders whether the pandemic has been an opportunity for you or a crisis, because one would say that because everyone was locked in, they couldn't travel, they couldn't savor new tastes and cuisines. Did durian production and exports grow significantly during the pandemic?
Yeah, we have our double sales last year. Mm. Very surprised, and my PE is very excited about it. With the challenges that we face, I don't want to name it, but there's so much of challenges during that, getting a permit for our farmers to enter the farm, and with all these the restrictions of, you know, going around from state to state, and people coming to work, the workers are very scared and they're afraid to get contaminated. So I had to work with very limited worker, and also worrying about my fruits will be contaminated. So can you imagine during that pandemic, you know, there's so many new challenge coming on board that we were like, but I have a very good team, I would say. Yeah, we managed to have bite size of actually digesting all the challenges, and we managed to have double the sales of last year. In fact, it's something that tells us that, you know, that people, even during the pandemic, people are like, what the heck, expensive, but we want to eat the best. Especially the mindset of the consumer have changed. Yeah, if they really want to enjoy, they want to enjoy the best. This is what I noticed during that, you know, behavior of the consumer.
The shift towards quality then.
Exactly.
On The Breakfast Grill, I'm in conversation with Anna Teo, founder and group CEO of Hernan Corporation. After the break, we discuss her expansion plans following the investment by private equity firm Nevis Capital. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back. On the Breakfast Grill, we have with us Anna Teo, founder and group CEO of Hernan Corporation, as we discuss how her business has been performing throughout the pandemic. Now, Anna, we must discuss about the investment made by Nevis Capital. They invested in Hernan in 2019. They were prepared to invest $400 million to do large capacity expansion for the production of all sorts of items, durian paste, durian puree, and many finished products. Give me the status of where the investment is so far.
Well, I think they have actually invested more than $400 million. Yeah, because we have actually acquired plantations, especially on the upstream site in plantation in Lodging. And we have expanded quite a lot. And we have more than 4 factories in Peninsula Malaysia that's covered Johor, Tangkap, Penang. And we are going to build my next challenge, which is something that I do not know how I'm going to do it, but I will try. They are asking me to build a 50 acres fully automated factory in Lodging, which I think this is doable because based on my experience of building so many factories, you know, in the last few years. So I think I'm going to duplicate that.
So wait, you have 4 factories now?
Yeah.
Okay. And so in 2019, when you opened that facility at Puncha Alam, that 100,000 square feet, fully used already, full capacity.
We are thinking, that is actually our downstream factories for our cakes, ice creams and what's not. But I'm actually acquiring next door to expand because we have actually expand our downstream's capacity now. Yeah. Mm.
How much of your business is upstream versus downstream, like revenue-wise?
So far, our downstream is about 20-25% comparing to our current upstream's market. Yeah.
And from a margin standpoint, like, is downstream better margins than upstream? Typically, give us a sense of how big the margin differential is.
Well, surely the downstream has a better margin, but I think I will keep it this way. I don't want too many competitions coming in. Sorry. Being a very typical entrepreneur, I think we knew, you know, actually, if you're talking about midstream, yeah, we're talking about all these fruits. They're very stagnant. And it's like how you manage your costs in order to get additional margin, you know, for what you have done. But nevertheless, on downstreams, you can play along with a lot of, you know, value adds and, you know,
the value added, the innovation that comes through, which then for me baffles the mind when I see things like durian cheese pizza. Really, Anna?
Yeah, those are innovations. You know, it comes to business, you know, comes to all this. We have to be creative. We cannot... It cannot be very stagnant. Yeah, if you are just selling fruits, I think people will just, you know, stay there with you. But we are trying going beyond, you know, and doing. Don't be surprised with what we have created. The durian cheese, we have very good response on
really?
That.
Really, how many sales have you got on that?
Quite a lot, but we will continue to come up with more crazy ideas and just, you know, we had to get every, you know, group of consumer client to actually to accept our products. If you want some for the young consumer or people doesn't like durian, they can take our mochi and ice cream. Well, we have actually create with the
milder palate
for people who doesn't really like very strong durian taste.
And is the distribution strategy to go direct to consumer with your own e-commerce platforms, or do you expect that you will always have to work with, you know, the supermarkets, the shopping malls, and, you know, the other e-commerce retailers?
Different segment. So, of course, the online, we can actually manage ourselves. Actually, the onlines are pretty straightforward, yeah? So, to cover the whole entire distribution for Peninsula, we still have to work with distributor. We still need their logistic arm, yeah?
I guess in Malaysia, downstream, upstream, how is it like overseas, like in China, right? What's the mix of downstream, upstream? Is it the same as well? Or in China, is it still very upstream-driven?
Yes. I mean, we call it the midstream, especially the upstream is more on plantation. I mean,
right, the plantation
for the fruits,
side.
Yeah. They are more onto the whole fruits, you know, the nitrogen whole fruits or the fruits in the prepacked.
The cut fruits, prepacked stuff. Not yet the innovative stuff yet.
But we are gradually accepting it, you know, at the consumer. They are asking us to create more things. And one of our biggest contributions of downstream is actually our mooncake. We have a very good market for our mooncake in China.
That's right. I heard actually the durian mooncake is extremely popular in China. Yeah. That explains also, I think, with the Navis Capital Investment back again, they did a this is what you were saying just now, the acquisition of about 10,000 acres of durian plantation. Mm-hmm. That was under you or was it under a separate entity?
Separate entity, but we will do it under a holding. So we will have the full 100% offtake of what they are planting. So we will work together on the marketing and definitely we will think how are we going to strategize to digest. Bear in mind, we heard about tsunami and I would have a durian tsunami in 8 years from now where we have 30,000 tons of fruits coming in and we have to plan how can we digest it all out to the market.
Yeah, I get the point. And I just want to draw back to the first question I asked you about how you said that this year's sales is a bit challenging simply because of the temperature and climate. How is climate change affecting your plans when you think about how you lay out your plantations going forward? Are you worried about climate change, about how it's going to affect production?
Of course I do. Well, with the climate change, you know, the yield of the fruits and the quality of the fruits will be deferred. But we have to do something. Yeah, we have to bring in AI to do a lot of data collection. We need to know when, you know, how we're going to do a proper cultivation. In fact, we are importing in our agrologists from Thailand. We are very specialized in durian to help us. Yeah, so We have to prepare for all this rather than wait for all the disasters coming in front of us, you know, because if we don't have fruits for the year or the quality of fruits are badly affected, we will have a big problem because we have signed, you know, quite substantial amount of durian that we need to commit. Yes.
I guess it's the biggest concern. When I hear you, the solution seems to be using science and technology, you know, using AI, using, you know, agrologists to kind of help you forecast and predict better. Is that really enough, though? That's the problem.
Of course, we are finding better solution. We are not resting as where we are now. So with my team, to be very frank, I'm on more into marketing. When it comes to cultivation, I think I have to leave the experts to do the job. So my partners on plantation, she, yeah, just bear in mind, she's also, yeah, a lady entrepreneur, and she is not resting herself. She's going all the way, you know, to find the best solutions to help to increase the sales so that, you know, whatever invested are not, you know, affected on what we forecast.
You emphasize the she part, you mm-hmm. know, about how, you know, you have been able to cultivate entrepreneurs, and you are definitely, I would say, an exception to the case of, you know, many successful female entrepreneurs there. And, you know, when I was researching on you, there were so many stories about how you transitioned from being a cabin crew to the Musang Queen. Do you sometimes feel that these labels can be very patronizing?
Yeah, this has actually been a lot of people have been asking me, and in fact, I've been going around to do a lot of talks and, you know, to encourage women to do a lot of women empowering talk to motivate, you know, the woman to come to work. And I would say I always would like to put it like from dream to reality. Yeah, a lot of people has been worrying, you know, about being a mother or being a woman, you know, they cannot achieve a lot of things. But I would like to give them the confidence. Yeah, not to say that I want to be a role model, but I just want to give all the ladies who are working out, they are not alone. And whatever they put in, yeah, they shouldn't be afraid that, you know, they will not get what they want. In fact, to be nominated in the men industries, I've proven my strength, my capability, and with my knowledge and skill, we shouldn't be afraid. Mm. Yeah.
But did people kind of not take you seriously in the beginning? Did people think, oh, you know, she's just a cabin crew, she doesn't know anything?
Truly, a lot of people have doubt about me. But for what, you know, being what I am today, I think I have actually proven quite a good my role at the present moment of being a CEO. But a lot of time, I do question myself. Nevertheless, nothing is too late. I'm doing my masterclass now. I'm trying to catch up what I should. But the masterclass, the degree, it's not really that important to me. But I think to really get yourself to feel on the feel of, you know, the real feel of the industry or the in the market, I think that's more important. So it being it or not, I would continue to drive, you know, my CSR by doing a lot of encouragement talk to all the ladies and those micro SMEs, you know, ladies that they want to come to work and they are not ready. So that's more about telling people what is about dream coming true, you know, how accomplished, you know, can you feel, especially when not knowing yourself, but to achieve something what you have today, it's really awesome.
We've been talking about durians, how you've expanded upstream, downstream. Would you ever contemplate other crops?
Well, since I've already given a title of Durian Queen, I try not to diversify it, but you know, for durian itself, I think I have, you know, I need to focus. Yeah. So yeah. I think Malaysia, the value of durian is still something that I think is worth to focus in. So for other crops, I will not say no, but we need to be focused.
That's all the time we have for today on The Breakfast Grill. I have with me Anna Teo, founder and group CEO of Hernan Corporation, as she explains to us how this large exporter of durians will grow from strength to strength. I'm Philip C, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, where unlimited potential begins.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.